As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
Nerd Talk, talking about Nerd Talk, yeah!
Hey, what up? Welcome to Nerd Talk Plus, our weekly deeper dive into the stories that make this world nerdier. From Odyssey's Nerd Talk, I'm your host, Gregor, and he used to work here too. He's Brandon. Hi.
Hey.
Now we just have a Google chat going back and forth all the time.
Yeah, about everything.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mainly teeth.
Honestly, a lot lately. Yeah. Oh, gosh. No, that was, if you listened to last week's show, yeah, clipping my teeth off.
Available nowhere.
Available nowhere because you have to listen to this live at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Yeah, neither of us is a scientist, engineer, or supervillain.
Yet, but we do have straighter teeth than we used to.
Now you can't trust us at all. Let us know if you are one of those things, though. We'd like to know what we're getting right and wrong.
We both look like used car salesmen now. Why are those guys' teeth so straight? They want to sell me something.
Why does he smile with such an open mouth all the time? I paid so much for this. You're going to look at him. Masks have been a great thing for everybody because you haven't had to see my new improved smile.
it's truly terrifying.
Hey, if you can hop on social media and let us know your answer to this week's question of the week.
Yeah, lots of long S's there. It must be those new teeth. The tongue pushing up against it. Yeah, this week's question of the week. Oh, also, wait, time out. I listened to last week's show because we're able to do that. And we tell people to tell us their response to this week's question of the week. Okay.
Yeah.
We say go on social media. We're not just like, if you're going onto social media and just putting out into the ether that like, you're like kind of like those Wordle tweets, right? Like you're just going out there and saying, you know,
4 out of 6.
Yeah, exactly. Like, please like go tweet at me, tweet at Greg, at Hey Gregor, at Brandon MG, on Twitter, or, you know, find us on Instagram or wherever it is.
Yeah.
And tell us the your response to this week's question.
Yeah, don't just like, it's like when I'm like, hey, what song do you want to hear? Don't just like shout it out your window. Yeah, I will not hear that.
Text the radio station what song you want to hear, right?
So this week's question of the week.
This week's question of the week is, which animal do you think would make the best Jedi? And if all of you are just out there tweeting to nobody, chimpanzee, like, we're not going to see
awesome. It. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I mean, yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that, but also definitely do that.
I can't wait to understand why. This is amazing. It might even be about something that I wrote.
It is, boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, be thinking about what animal, of all of the animals on this planet, except humans, technically animals, but which animal do you think would make the best Jedi?
I'd like to start out this week. Oh, well, I probably shouldn't start with the story I wanted to start with then, because I think it's the actual answer.
Nope.
Is it about birds?
No.
Okay. A team of bird-loving Swedish researchers are training crows to pick up cigarette butts in exchange for food. Effectively, there's a small tray. They drop the butt into it, and then like a change dispenser at a grocery store, a couple little bird seeds come out. They get that. They go find another one. It's pretty sweet, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, boy. Now, before you know it, crows will figure out something else that weighs the exact same amount because they are very smart, and then they will be bringing that over and robbing the machines like naughty teenagers or anyone at my former apartment complex with the vending machine.
Nice, nice. They eventually they're going to be asking for Bitcoin. It birdseed? Are you kidding me? Give me some Ethereum.
Birdcoin?
Birdcoin. These tokens are non-fungible. Give me funge.
I need funge. Also, anyone who pretends to know what an NFT actually is a liar. I just want to establish that.
Yeah.
I mean, I get what the concept is. It's like an idea that you're buying into, and it's forever recognized in the blockchain because it's constantly being referenced by the checks that a blockchain has to do to make sure all the calculations are correct. But yeah, like, I guess if I buy an MP3 off of iTunes 10 years ago, I would own an NFT effectively because I wouldn't actually have a physical thing, but I could turn it into a physical thing.
Right.
And I don't know, whatever. That's dumb. The whole, like, I saw someone be like, if selling Kurt Cobain, it was my own station, now that I think about it, but it was like Kurt Cobain and Nirvana being made into NFTs. Is this lame? Or are you just resisting change if you don't like it? And I was like, hand me the thing that I'm supposed to enjoy, and then I'll get back to you, because the answer is definitely this is lame.
I think the idea, I heard somebody explain it, and I want to get back to this trained crow thing, picking up a cigarette butts. But like the way I heard somebody explain it was, you know, you can, and I don't know if I agree with this, because it's not quite one-to-one, but you can go to the Louvre and you can take a picture of the Mona Lisa, but that doesn't mean that you own it, because everybody says, oh, you could just right-click, copy and paste a picture of an NFT or whatever, and then all of a sudden you have that thing. But just because you have a picture of it, or just because you have a copy of it, doesn't necessarily mean that you have the same thing. But even the Louvre doesn't own the Mona Lisa, right? Like somebody super wealthy owns it and lends it or leases it to the Louvre to have on display. But I guess I still don't get it, because it kind of seems like, and I've seen a lot of comparisons to things like Beanie Babies, you know, like what is the true value of these things other than we're all just super into this, and that is what creates values. It's like sneakerheads, right? Like an Air Jordan, a limited edition Air Jordan would have no value at all unless there were 50,000 people that wanted to say, I want those shoes to be mine, right? But otherwise, it's inherently no value, except at least in that case, it's a physical object, right? Like it is a limited, rare thing, right? If only 100 are made, you can only get one of those specific things.
Yeah, but it's a physical thing.
It's a physical item. It has value. You keep it pristine, blah, 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 blah. I'm sure there's somebody listening to this right now yelling out into the ether, and we probably shouldn't have given them our Twitter handles. Otherwise, now we're just going to get some complaints.
It was acquired by King Francis I of France. It is now property of the French Republic, on permanent display at the Louvre since 1797. So France owns it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, France isn't a real thing. It's just an idea.
Yeah. I mean, France is fungible.
I mean, it like...
Is France fungible?
I mean, you could dig a hole in France and stick your wiener in it, but like, it's not actually like the idea of a border is an imaginary line.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a line in a Fugazi song that's like, America is just a word, but I use it because you have to be able to distinguish between one thing and another.
Well, I mean, it's this understanding that we all know what the thing is. If you refer to it, we all have that same collective understanding. That's what gives that thing meaning and value, and also like the social services that we all are able to collect and use because of that collective understanding of the country, right? Now, I have never dug a hole and stuck my wiener in America. Does that make it any less fungible?
Is the word fungible or f***able? I might have been saying this wrong the whole time.
I'm down to funge.
Hey, baby, you down to funge? You good looking to have some funge? Hey, boys. So, fimpar is the Swedish word for cigarette butt.
Oh, that's
something
nice
that I learned by this. Yeah. Yes, that they're training these crows to go pick up fimpar and drop it off in exchange for some sort of little token or something like that. And crows are smart. Now, I have a cat called Peanut, and we used to do the soccer broadcast thing, and the producer guy would always, like, they had, like, a a bingo sheet of the ridiculous things that we would say, and they were like betting against us saying things, and they were way, one of the things is me talking about my cat Peanut, which I would do every week for a giggle for myself. Well, Peanut has thumbs, he's polydactyl, and so you'll be eating it, you'll reach to grab a chip out of the bag, and he will literally grab a chip out of your hand and steal it. And I figure that at some point, crows are just going to swoop down as you're trying to take a puff off your butt and just like grab a cigarette butt from you and take it and drop it into the bin.
I mean, maybe that's Sweden's ultimate goal is like an anti-smoking campaign, right? Like instead of having those teenagers who are meant to make you feel less cool in commercials by telling you how lame smoking is, they just have a bunch of aggressive crows stealing cigarettes out of people's mouths.
We need that in America, evidently. I guess this is the first time in the last... hold on, let me check my notes real quick. I think this is the first time in the last...
I have those same glasses.
Do you have the same ones?
I have the same pair.
I just did that for effect. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. No, those are great. Little Warby Parker.
Last time you made fun of me for being an old man with glasses, and I got them, and it's a whole thing. Anyway, for the first time in like 20 years, the rate of smoking has gone up in America. So everything, in fact, is getting terrible.
Well, okay, so here's maybe what I think the Swedes should do, or if we wanted to learn anything from the Swedes in this case, which in general, there are a lot of things that the fungible America could learn from Sweden in this case, okay? First of all, like, I'm sure that humans are probably easier to train to do things like pick up cigarette butts, and they would probably do it if you offered them food. In the case of, you know, people who are without a home or people who are without a steady income, right? Give them a job to do. You know, we live near a city like we live near Seattle, and in Seattle, everybody's always complaining about, oh, the city's dirty and we hate the homeless. I mean, really, like, you see so much just vitriol toward unhoused people online, and it's like, well, okay, like, how about instead of training animals to do this thing because bird seed's so cheap and we can give it to crows, like, let's incentivize humans to do some of this stuff.
Yeah, I like, it's crazy. Like, I follow Portland a lot also because I'm on there on KNRK 94.7 FM, Alternative Portland. And so I'm reading about their news a lot, and there's a group called D-Trash Portland that just goes around picking up trash for no incentive other than to feel good.
Not even like, birdseed.
Where is the government in all of this? How come, like, why are there not resources for... And then it becomes a whole other issue.
Sure.
Meanwhile, you ever won anything from a claw grab game?
No, like a Finnish race car driver's helmet.
It's so dope. I got the helmet, man. It's so dope.
Oh, you did? I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture. It's cool. Yeah. They sent me so much coffee, too, so to catch anyone up. I entered a contest to win Valtteri Bottas's race-worn helmet in the Brazilian Grand Prix last year, and because he's a part owner of this coffee company, and they roasted a bunch of beans and sent it to me, like probably like a couple $100 worth of beans.
No way.
I'll never get through it in time before it's like not at its best. But anyway, and then also his race worn helmet. And so I'm posting pictures of it later today or tomorrow.
That's awesome.
It's in the next couple of days. But yeah, like, you know, the claw games where you go and you have to try and pick up a stuffy and then bring it out and then drop it into the thing. And you could see. So there's people who have like learned how those games work and they can win like all the time. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to me. But China has taken it to a crazy new level. A Chinese satellite was witnessed changing its orbital position, grabbing another satellite from its own orbit, and then pulling it out further away to die.
Oh my gosh.
There's just like a...
did the first satellite go, get over here?
If it didn't, I mean, opportunity missed. But to be fair, anytime one space agency does something, the other ones are all working on it. So your move, NASA. Now, space trash is flying around like a... the space station or whatever, to leave the atmosphere, you have to be traveling 17,000 miles per hour. And like, I don't think anyone ever really stops to think about how crazy that is to be able to go that fast. But once you get out to where there's no air resistance and it's a matter of just getting it slowed down in the right spot. We got the James Webb in its position about 900,000 miles away from the Earth. And it's like three or four times further than the moon and stuff. But there's like all of these satellites in this really tight, knit spot around the planet. You probably can't even see them if you're in space, but in terms of tracking them and trying not to make them smash into each other. So to fly one at 17,000 miles an hour, get up next to another one, latch onto it, and then fling it up out of orbit so that way it goes higher up and isn't a nuisance for now. It's like super short-sighted. It's pretty crazy to be able to do that without human intervention and having robots do it.
It's kind of the same way that when I was a kid, well, actually, realistically, before I had a wife, it was how I cleaned my room, right? Like this whole idea of short-sightedness.
Just with a whip.
Yeah, it was a whip. No, it was kind of like a, I would walk into my room and I'd be like, oh, I need to do something in that spot in the corner of the room. So I will pick up that thing and move it to a different spot until, until I have to do something in that spot. Then I'll walk and move that back to the original spot. So I don't know, because wasn't it a few years ago, or maybe even it was last year, there was this idea that a Chinese satellite was crashing back into Earth orbit, and there was a lot of question about where it was going to land.
Yeah.
So obviously it is very difficult, especially if a satellite maybe runs out of fuel or some in order to be able to reposition itself, or it becomes disconnected from its Earth handlers or whatever it might be. You need to find a way to dispose of that satellite or remove it or move it or control its descent back to Earth. If you can't control that descent, who knows where it's going to land? Thankfully, I'm pretty sure that Chinese satellite that did come back to Earth mostly landed in, you know, the ocean, possibly in some uninhabited desert land. Right. But so this is a really interesting, you know, like you said, short-sighted solution to the problem, which is, okay, maybe we can just go grab it with another satellite and push it somewhere where if it does fall, we can at least track that trajectory or decide where it's going to fall, right? Like you don't have to control that thing manually anymore. You can use another thing to move it to where you need it to be. First, I guess it's a good solution to a potential problem, so it's nice to have that, but also, like, let's stop losing contact with satellites in space, maybe.
So the other problem that they had is that they blew one up, like the Russians, I think, blew one up recently, and then parts went everywhere, and everyone's like, hey, bro, you can't do that. You're going to hit humans out there, and, like, that's cost a lot of money to get everyone up there, get hurt your own people and stuff. This is, like, a different problem altogether. And then the third one that you were talking about with that rocket carcass that was coming back down through the atmosphere. You got to think that the best case scenario is to send things on a slow burn trajectory through the atmosphere so it just disintegrates and it's gone and we don't have to think about it, rather than
hucking things deeper into space. Yeah.
And then, like, you're trying to launch to Mars and you get hit by a, you know, Chinese satellite with the middle finger up or whatever, like, whatever their equivalent is of that.
Yeah,
So this weekend, bad guys and billionaires. Elon has offered to pay a teen to do something, well, not suspicious, but yeah, I know, right? I made it sound
maybe,
bad.
Maybe let's not insinuate anything that's going to get us in trouble.
A college student claims that Elon Musk offered him $5,000 to shut down a little Twitter account that tweets every time Elon's private plane takes off or lands. It's all legal information as filed with the FAA, so this kid just keeps, you know, there's logs, and the Twitter account just combs through them, and when it sees it, it posts it, that, okay, oh, he's taking off, the flight plan is filed, or whatever. Elon slid into his DM saying, I don't love the idea of being shot at by a nutcase. I don't blame you, Elon, that's actually pretty relevant. Jack Sweeney, the student, responded by saying, how about $50,000 instead of the $5,000 that he offered, so I can at least afford to buy a Tesla? Ultimately, Jack said he'd delete the 90,000-plus follower account in exchange for an internship. But the last I had read, the message was left on unread.
Ooh.
So maybe enough headlines will get Elon to pay attention. That usually does it. But enough attention gets him to pay attention.
Well, at this point, it's the damage is done, right? Like, have you ever heard of the Streisand effect? It's the idea.
I never remember what it is, though.
So the idea is that, so Barbra Streisand, a long time ago, somebody had posted a picture of Barbra Streisand's house onto the internet, and it got, you know, basically zero traction because these celebrity houses are a dime a dozen, right? Like, everybody expects these people's houses to be huge. Well, Barbra Streisand's got her feathers ruffled and decided to go ask that person if that person would pull the photo off of the internet. Well, her asking somebody to remove the photo ended up getting that photo a ton more traction than it would have ever gotten if she had said nothing. Now, this Twitter account posting Elon's flight logs probably would have had a pretty decent following before he said anything, but I probably would have never heard about it. Some random dude in Spokane, Washington. however, now that Elon has asked this kid and also come at him with an offer that is insulting for somebody of his wealth, right? To come in for an offer of $5,000 to remove this thing. I'm like, okay, that's hilarious. I hope this kid never pulls down the Twitter account. And now if he does, you know, it's just a matter of time before somebody else creates one because they see that Elon's going to pay. There's this, we're both big soccer fans, big Premier League fans in England, and one of these teams is called Newcastle United, and they've recently been taken over by a very, very, very wealthy Saudi or Emirates businessman, like some very wealthy sheik, right?
Yeah.
And now they are going in, they've paid a few players, new players, a ton of money, and now when they go sign other players, these players are like, well, no, I saw what you paid that guy. You need to give me a lot more. You need to give me what that guy's making at least, right? And they're paying, you know, 3-4 times over the market value for these players from other clubs in the country and from out the country, right? Elon Musk, everybody knows how much money this guy has, or at least, you know, a general assumption that he's got billions.
I'm sorry, the richest man on the planet?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you've got Elon Musk coming to you with $5,000, no, bro, come on.
I think you'd be better off actually not publicizing this if you're the kid and just be like, hey, how about you give me an internship and I'll just delete it, and then not telling the press, because yeah, as a celebrity who doesn't need you to be shut down or recognizes that someone else is just going to copycat and do the same thing, now you've kind of probably limited your ability to make any money off of it.
Yeah.
Now, the Newcastle ownership group is, it's technically, I guess, owned by the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia.
Okay, yeah.
But it's technically owned by the Public Investment Fund. So
just a shell fund that he created to not be personally responsible for any of their dealings.
Something to that effect, I would imagine. I actually don't know the specific details.
I mean, it's like their new chairman is not the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. He is not the guy like making the decisions for the team. It's actually this woman who's the new chairman of the team, which is awesome. So I don't know. Newcastle is paying a lot of money for a lot of players to possibly still get relegated.
Shout out to the world's oldest known living creature, 190-year-old Roy Hodgson. No, that's a joke, another soccer joke, I'm sorry.
I thought it was Neil Warnock.
Shout out to the world's oldest known living earth creature, a land-based animal, 190-year-old-ish tortoise named Jonathan.
Oh, that's nice.
Now, I got a couple things about this. One, like, naming seems so common when like throughout a lifetime, like, you know, there's the year that you were born, there's probably a bunch of people who you associate with every day with similar names, that, you know, and then other years, like Olivia is the number one name. I think you have a
my sister. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, and then when I was a kid and younger, like down the generation before that, there was a lot of like Catholic names were very popular. So you get a lot of Michaels and stuff like that, right? And throughout time, you get all these different names that happen. And some of them are traditional and stick around forever, maybe get different pronunciations and stuff. But it's pretty wild to know that Jonathan was a common enough name, or maybe uncommon enough name, that you would name a freaking tortoise that. Now, he was born back in 1832. Like, my dog's name is Ladybug. I would have named her Dr. Chompers if I had my way about it. But, you know, those things, it's not like, this is my dog, Alan. So I don't know how common Jonathan is, especially among tortoises.
I did have when I was a kid, I had a dog named Jake. You know, I should ask my mom if it was short for Jacob. Like, if he got in trouble, did we call him Jacob?
Jacob Alexander.
Oh, did you just give my dog the initials Jag? Because that's awesome.
Listen here, you jag off. Get over here. So now, if this is true that the tortoise is 190 years old, he was born in at least 1832. I like saying the 100 part. It makes it sound older.
Yeah.
1832. That's at least the oldest known record of him. And they start doing the math on it that they like don't fully mature until they're like 50, like Baby Yoda. Now, there aren't any pictures of him from back then because we didn't have cameras invented when he hatched. And I had to think about that. I think that turtles hatch. I'm pretty sure that's what they do. So in reality, he could be even older than that because he is literally older than the oldest camera.
Think about like a 50-year-old United States at this point, right? Like The Civil War hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, like pre-Civil War. Like, yeah. Evidently, he was on the right side, I guess. I don't. Well, I guess technically he lived in the South Atlantic.
Yeah,
so
this turtle or tortoise lives in, which is actually an important distinction, lives on St. Helena Island in the South Atlantic Ocean. So it's a British owned.
Why is it important?
Why is it? I guess it's not important where he lives.
Okay, yeah. You said important distinction, and I was like,
sorry. Why is it? I thought you were asking why it's important that he lives in St. Helena Island. I don't know. I just, in case people want to go see it, it's one of the top 20 attractions in St. Helena, according to the list that I was
reading.
Hello,
I'm here for Jonathan.
It's important to know the difference between a turtle and a tortoise, because turtles are like in the ocean, and they swim, and they don't have front legs like the tortoise does.
Oh, do they have flippers?
Yeah, they got the flips.
Flippy floppies?
Little flippy floppies.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, speaking of flippy floppy, you've got a note in here that says he's pansexual?
Yeah, the headline that I found from Nerdist.com says, 190-year-old pansexual tortoise king is oldest living land animal. And I was like, that's quite the detail to just throw in there. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know what pansexual meant. Does he a lot of bread, or like, is he like from American Pie the movie? Like, doesn't really hot apple pie on a tortoise wiener? Like, so I had to look it up.
Yeah, I think that when you're 190 years old, you just kind of are like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, at this point, yeah, I'll take what I can get.
So, pansexual means not limited in sexual choice with regard to biological sex, gender, or gender identity. And the rumor is that there's a couple other tortoises that are around. One's name is something old-timey female, and then there's Fred. And Jonathan will go to town on either of them. So, I guess. He's still very virile, evidently.
I wonder, I'm curious, like, in, you know, how with, like, dogs, like, certain dogs will just hump anything. Like, a male dog will just go for anything. And it's not, like, necessarily a sexual thing. It's more of, like, a dominance
rub
thing.
Your junk on stuff.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Is the 190...
Oh, we said different things, but okay.
yeah, sure. Is the 190-year-old Jonathan just asserting his dominance? Or is he just like, you know what? 190. I'm not going to try to find a female. You're the closest thing. I'm going for this.
Oh, there's a soccer ball.
Yeah, here's a soccer. What's that? Remember that little turtle? Remember that little turtle sex noise? Have you ever seen that video?
No. It's like a.
You got to talk to the guys from the men's room about it, because I'm pretty sure they use it a lot. Now. That's the sound the tortoise makes. Now, okay, so I find it interesting because he's the world's oldest known living Earth creature. You say he's 190 years old. Now, I know for a fact, like, if we can talk about whales for a second, if you'll indulge me.
You have been banned from talking about whales, but we'll allow it since it's relevant.
Okay. The longest lifespan of all, at least marine mammals, the longest lifespan belongs to the bowhead whale. Okay, and there's believed to be, in a recent study done by the Telegraph, actually, there's believed to be a bowhead whale that has lived for 238 years. So this guy makes Jonathan look like a young stud, a young pansexual stud. Sorry, I can't leave out that detail. Thank you, Nerdist.
There's a hole you can wiener in.
It's in America. Exactly. Oh. Apparently, it's in St. Helena in the South Atlantic. Now, a bowhead whale it might only be the second longest of all lifespans of any animal, topped only by the 500-year lifespan of a North Atlantic clam called the ocean quahog or something.
Isn't quahog from like the TV show
the family guy? Yeah, I think so. So it's a 500-year-old, or at least a clam that can live up to 500 years old. And now I'm looking
what happens if I Google old clam?
Actually, I'm curious. Put on those glasses and let's see.
Excuse me, hold on, I'm getting to it. There we go.
Now you look like a guy that would Google that.
Its name is Ming.
Oh, okay.
It's an ocean quahog. Hafrun is a nickname given to a specimen of the ocean quahog clam that was dredged off the coast of Iceland in 2006, and whose age is calculated by counting annual growth lines in the shell. Hafrun, was the oldest individual animal ever discovered whose age could be precisely determined. Born circa 1400.
Holy crap.
and 99.
Oh my gosh.
If only everyone could see my glasses taking off glasses. Effect.
Yeah, I was hoping a pun was coming and you're going to be like that guy from NCIS.
Oh, you mean from CSI?
CSI, yeah.
CSI Miami?
Yeah. Now, okay, so the bowhead whale. So we've got Jonathan the tortoise, 190 years old, this alleged bowhead whale that is 238 years old. And now we've got this old clam that is like... over 500 years old, if he's still living. Now,
evidently, all that private browsing that I've been doing has helped my search results when I search on the normal web.
Now, none of these things hold a tentacle to what is also possibly the oldest living creature. The oldest living creature, which is a jellyfish, which is believed to be immortal.
What? There's no such thing.
Now, the jellyfish can be killed. It can be eaten. It can be torn apart by a predator. All of the things that can kill a jellyfish or whatever. Now, however, there's this jellyfish species, and it is called the Turritopsis dorni. Yeah, and it will get to a certain point in its cycle where if it's believed to be dying if it thinks it's going to die because of starvation or because of any other reason, what it can do is it can reset itself to an earlier time in its genetic cycle. So think about like if a butterfly thinks it's going to die of starvation. I don't know what a butterfly is. I don't know other smaller little bugs. If a butterfly thinks it's going to die of starvation,
pure beef. That's it. They just only eat cow.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Oh my god, that butterfly is covered in blood.
Maybe we could train a butterfly to eat cigarette butts. Who knows?
It picks up cow turds. It can just pick the mushrooms out of the cow turds for the hippies.
This jellyfish. So think about a butterfly almost dying of starvation and reverting back to a caterpillar before it, that they can just go back to eating leaves. This jellyfish can revert itself back to a pupae, basically, is what it's called. And it's a very early version. It's basically like a fertilized egg, and that it can regrow into itself as a jellyfish. It's not giving birth to a thing. It is letting itself die, but remaining still alive in this smaller like embryo, basically.
The pupa is when they go into the coffin, the organic coffin, what's that called? Cocoon?
Yeah.
The pupa is what's inside of the cocoon.
Okay.
So they just go back to pupa stage and then re-poop out, and then they're good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's, these things are crazy. And we talk all the time about like the asexual condors, the Californian asexual condors, about how...
Who doesn't love that?
Who doesn't love an asexual condor or a pansexual tortoise? for a species that's trying to care a lot less about gender...
We should link the two together and have flying pansexual asexual...
These...
Tondors.
Tondors.
Tordons.
A turdor. Oh, I can't. A turdor is disgusting. Now,
no, it's a tordor.
A tordor.
Right?
A tordor.
There we go. Thank you. Not to be confused with the turtle with the flippers.
Yeah, yeah.
This has four legs and wings. Okay.
It's not a character from Game of Thrones. Tordor. Anyway, I think humans are trying to learn so much from animals, and like what parts of animals can we take and bring back and like incorporate or crossbreed with humans and get different, like what can we learn from cells and then put them in humans so that we can like regrow arms like a salamander or something like that, right?
Well, some great news in that department, specifically for frogs, especially in France.
Okay.
There's some ground frogs. Here we go. I mean, fungible frogs. There we are. Scientists have been able to reactivate growth cells to regenerate the very springy legs on our froggy friends.
What? Whew.
Yeah, I don't understand how this works. How, like, I guess it's like anything else. Wait, what's up?
So first of all, they had growth cells to begin with. That had,
yeah, I think,
to
that's
be...
how the legs grew, yeah.
Oh, okay, I see. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so you grew legs. Yeah, I guess we all had to grow our body parts,
legs.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they grew these legs, and then they lost... So these freaky French scientists started just cutting off frog legs. which I guess is a delicacy. Oh, this, you know what?
What?
This is all because people like frog. Like, at first you're like, oh man, this is awesome. We're trying to help the frogs out. Like, give them like the salamander tail thing where like they lose a leg, they can grow it right back. It just turns out that we're just trying to find sustainable farming things for frog legs.
We're moving away from beef to get rid of those goddamn butterflies.
Those stupid ass butterflies.
Now we're going straight into taking it out of the frogs.
Take it out of the frog.
The butterflies have developed a taste for frogs. Yeah, so during very early development, cells that will eventually become limbs and organs arrange themselves into precise anatomical structures using a set of chemicals, biomechanical and electrical signals, says an article at fastcompany.com that you can read more of. They're figuring out how to redo that. This is great news, specifically for humans and lightsaber fighting. Imagine if Luke Skywalker could have grown his hand back.
Yeah. Except I bet you it would have been like a Deadpool type situation where it grows back and it's just like the baby little hand is like, I'm a Jedi. Okay, dude, but what's going on there?
I can still give you the bird.
Oh, it's so cute.
So you wear a prosthetic for a while, Imagine how much that would hurt. You think your teeth hurt from wearing Invisalign. Just imagine what happens if you have to grow back an arm after a lightsaber fight. It like must hurt forever.
What we're not, you know, seeing here is how long it takes for that frog leg to grow back, right? You activate that growth hormone and reactivate, I should say, because they grew the leg there once. You reactivate that growth gene or whatever, growth cell, and it starts to grow the leg, but does it grow it back to the original size, or does it grow at the same rate that the original leg grew? Because I don't know. Like, think about humans, right? How long did it take you for your arm to grow to the length that it is, right? So typically, people...
18 years?
18 to 25 years is when you're done growing, okay? So you've reached 25 years, you've got your 25-year-old arm, and then you lose it, and they reactivate the growth gene in your shoulder or wherever it is, and you grow that arm back. So, but you're not going to have a normal arm until you're 50.
At that point, though, can they figure out how to regrow other stuff and our lifespan extends? This is what I think about when we're talking about that, the clam that lives, Ming the clam that lives 500 years, or the undying immortal jellyfish that can just respawn itself back to youth. Like, we've probably mentioned it on the show before even, when you extend life that much, like if I eat a bowhead whale tomorrow, if I shoot one, and that thing's been around for like 200 years... Like, that's a lot of time that we were just, like, flippantly like, oh, give me that blubber, whale. And the consequences of taking life then become even more significant. Mm-hmm. So,
you cut off the arm of a 200-year-old clam. I know clams don't have arms, do they? But, but you know, if these frog legs, that if they're able to regenerate, because, like, maybe in a frog, right, the gestation period of a frog is probably much shorter. They probably reach, you know, full size or full growth much faster than humans do. So, it actually is worthwhile to regenerate a frog's leg for that frog purpose, right? Again, these aren't just a bunch of frog-loving French people who are trying to grow frogs for the frog's benefit. What we're doing as a species is trying to see what we can learn from these animals and adapt for ourselves, right? Now, maybe they're going to find a way, like, oh, we found a way to age these jellyfish faster than they originally would. So we adapt that with the regrowing frog leg, and now we're able to get that frog leg to grow even faster. Now I'm 30 and I've grown my arm so fast that I have a 70-year-old arm because it shot right past me. Oh, now we got to figure out how to slow it down, right? So
you leave it in too long because you're scrolling TikTok. You're I've got to leave this in for 10 minutes. 50 minutes. Yeah. Oh no!
I'm 18 and have arthritis in an arm that I lost from a snowboarding accident. I don't know. Is that
chainsaw fight?
Chainsaw fight. Yeah. Way cooler.
Way cooler. Well, because everything is terrible, Brandon, there's always something, we're always looking for something that's a little bit positive, a little more optimistic. And I found it this week, something, a really good gesture that Lego, who deserve all the props, will soon begin providing custom or specialized MRI sets to children's hospitals to help sick kiddos who are going to have to undergo an MRI better prepare for what could otherwise be a scary procedure.
Oh.
If you look at the images that Lego use, it is children with like the sadistic full smile, which they like does not reflect how like it's not going to be that good. It's not a party.
Yeah.
There's like, hey, kid, you're not getting a pony in there. You're like, or a 190-year-old tortoise or something like that isn't going to try and help you. It's still like it's a little, they've gone a little overboard, but still to give kids Legos to play with that help the normalize the procedure. I thought that was so cool and like so appropriate. And since kids are their number one clients, followed by 40-year-old men, I think that it's a pretty good touch. And if I had to get an MRI and I could have a Lego MRI set, I would feel better.
That'd be awesome. I'm looking at the picture, and I was expecting it to be like, I mean, it makes sense. It's custom pieces that were used to build a MRI set. I was hoping it was going to be like regular Lego blocks because, you know, growing up, we didn't get the cool, as a kid, my parents never bought us the custom, you know, Star Destroyer set or the thing that came with all these custom pieces that you would specifically use to build a Star Destroyer. We were taking pieces of other things to build, you know, kind of these janky spaceships and things like that. But it was cool. It was creative. It was fun. I was hoping that this MRI thing would look a little bit more like that, like it had used a bunch of just random blocks and things like that. Because then how cool would it be at a children's hospital? I've got friends who work at a children's hospital. If they make like the environment in children's hospital really cool, right? Like they put big murals up on the wall and the murals are all fun and they've got fun little things for the kids. It's like still a hospital, but like these kids don't really understand the gravity of the situation that they're in half the time. Make the MRI look like a big Lego set. Like make the life-size MRI that you're going into look like a big Lego set, or like the mouth of a tiger or something. Kids probably wouldn't love going into.
A clown with an axe.
Make it look like that.
Get into this hole or I'll kill you with my axe, kid.
I mean, hey, my kid's only a month old. I don't know what they like yet. Do they like clowns with axes? Let's do a clown with axe party.
Well, on that note, I hate to wrap things up on such a positive note, but it's time that we took this heady show and boiled it all down. What did we learn this week?
I learned that kids like clowns with axes.
Who doesn't? Kids. Everybody.
Everybody loves clowns with axes. Gregor, what did we learn this week?
You know, I meant to ask you about this at the top, but do you think that if you're in space, that you snore worse or less with no gravity to hold the parts of your face back to cause the snoring?
You know I'm going to say like snore less.
You think that because the epiglottis or whatever it is can just like hang out and not be squished down in the back of your throat, you do better?
Yeah. And probably like they don't let you drink in space, so I would snore a lot less because that's the only time I ever snore.
The weird part is that your arms float in front of you, that there's no, like, you don't secure them down.
Yeah.
So, like, just imagine snoring with arms.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like a zombie's coming for you.
Just a drunk, sleepy zombie. And my wife is still pissed at me.
They just have a direct feedback to Earth for her to listen to you snore. Yeah. Shut up!
Turn that off, NASA!
So, this week
thing into deep space.
This week I learned if you're going to extort Elon Musk that you should definitely do it before you publicize it because you might be able to get a free Tesla rather than him ignoring you.
I mean, that is a good... I think if you're going to take anything away from this show today, it's how to extort a billionaire.
Finally, we've done something of value. You learn anything else today, Brandon?
Yeah, I learned about a tortorm. And you know what? I honestly did learn a lot about animals. I learned because... You know, reading about the Jonathan, the 190-year-old tortoise, made me want to learn more about bowhead whales. Not that it takes a lot to make me want to learn about whales, but if I had never learned about that whale, I would have never learned about the immortal jellyfish.
I speculate that it gave you an opportunity to talk about whales, not to learn more.
Yeah, okay. To be fair, I did not know that about bowhead whales to begin with. I did know about bowhead whales, great animal, two blowholes, just like all cetaceans.
Yeah,
or,
that's
or sorry, not like all cetaceans. Like, if I dig a hole in a whale, can I f*** it?
Nerd talk, talking about nerd talk, yeah!
Thanks for joining us for Nerd Talk Plus every Tuesday at 10 a.m. And sometimes when it doesn't work, you can find it on the Nerd Talk podcast feed. Just search for it on your favorite podcast thing, specifically the Odyssey app, where you're listening right now, probably. Okay, bye!
Listen to a bunch of horny whales.
Go fund yourself.
Go fund yourself.
What kind of programs does this school have?
How are the test scores? How many kids to a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skene strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.